We are in week three of our weird series. The weird thing about money is money cannot buy you more. Here all along, you thought it could, but it cannot buy you more. Our culture defines happiness basically as more than I currently have. Whether it's more possessions, more money, a better job, a better position, more square footage, whatever. It is more. And you do what you need to do to get more. You borrow it. You put it on your credit card. You go for it. You deserve it. But you need more if you're going to be happy. Where Proverbs 15:16 says, better a little fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. Our society, we think we'll have more satisfaction if we have more stuff. Now, I got to admit, I like more stuff, and I like shiny things. I happen to have, I guess my mom said, expensive taste. You know, what you like, it just happens to cost the most. It's like, I don't know how that happens. It's just me. So as a Christian, you know, I always battle that, am I spending this the right way? Am I doing what God wants me to do with this? Am I managing his resources the way he wants me to manage it? And so I have a solution for you if you're battling that and you're in that life span too, where that's always on our radar. That are we doing right? Well, for me, I got a solution. The solution is for our family. It's four elements. It's Landon, Kerner, Skyler, and Ledger. Landon, our oldest, 19. Ledger, our youngest, at 10. And they have helped me with that problem. And so Landon got his license 3 years ago. And started driving, and we thought when the kids were young and we were kind of doing the family planning, it'd be great that they were close in age and they get to play together. And when we go to Kings Island, they would have, you know, someone to ride the rides with, especially twisty ones, and we wouldn't have to ride those and puke afterwards. So we'll have our kids close together. Now that we have three teenage drivers, it's not fun. Like, what were we thinking? And Lana comes home from work and is like, Dad, I backed the Equinox into a truck and smashed in the back hatch. He goes, well, I'm going to fix it. It's like, okay. I forgot to ask when. Somebody the other day said, oh, did somebody run in the back of your car? It's like, no, my son backed into somebody. And so Kerner is 18, and he's already had three accidents, two with our Saturn and one with our minivan. And so I said, okay, Kern, we need to go to the junkyard. We're going to buy that part and this part, and we're going to fix it ourselves. Dad, I don't know how to take the radiator off and the bumper off. And the light's like, we'll figure it out. If somebody built it, we can take it apart and fix it. And so what we can't figure out, we'll YouTube it, right? We'll learn to do it that way. And with our minivan, it's just ripped off the mirror of the minivan and smashed in the door, scratched it all the way down, busted the headlight, completely destroyed our neighbor's mailbox. So, okay, you're going to start helping to pay for some of this, too. And so we'd go to Lowe's, and we found the exact mailbox and bought all the parts and rebuilt their mailbox and had to get paint and painted it. And he's like, Dad, well, I never knew a mailbox cost so much money. It's like, yeah. And so things break in our house all the time. Glasses, things on the wall, furniture, there's marks and gashes in the wall. It's like, how does this happen? What are you guys doing all the time? Most of the time, no one seems to fess up or know anything about the damages that are done in our house. One day, I come out to get in my truck, and the back corner panel is smashed in. I'm thinking, okay, where was I yesterday? What parking lot was I in? And how did I miss getting in my truck and not seeing that huge dent? I asked all the kids, anybody know anything about this dent? No, Dad, no. So nobody had anything to do with this dent? No, no, no. And Skylar now has her temps, and she's learning to drive. So she has to get 50 hours in with Mom and Dad before she is allowed to apply for her license. And so she's driven some with TNG, and the other day TNG texted me a photo of the car where she wrecked it, and the bumper's ripped off, the headlights smashed, and the fender is smashed, and she says, it's okay, she didn't hit another car, it happened in our driveway, I'll explain it when you get home. It's like, how do you do that in our driveway? And she said, well, she was backing up and she hit a pole that was a pole to, for our tree to keep our tree straight, and I told her to stop, and she hit the gas instead of the brake and just kept going and just ripped it off. I said, Skylar, why are you backing up? In fact, I made a turnaround in our driveway because it was a problem backing up and all the chaos in the cars and their friends. It's like, so I tried to make it as easy as possible. And she's like, Dad, I was working on my backing skills. It's like, Skylar, you have no backing skills. Zero. There's nothing to work on. And so she has a job at the swim club that is not far from her house. And so she can go through the end of our neighborhood, cut across the yard. We asked the people, could she take the golf cart there? And that's her transportation to work. And notice that the headlight in the golf cart is smashed in. It's like, who wrecked the golf cart? And Skylar said, Dad, I did. I hit a tree. How do you hit a tree with a golf cart? And she's like, well, I was reaching down for my coffee and I wasn't watching. She goes, it hurt my chest when I hit the steering wheel. They need to have seatbelts in golf carts. It's like, no, they don't, because no one ever wrecks a golf cart. You're the first. And I noticed the golf cart was sitting next to my truck. And the metal bar on the back of the golf cart seemed to be right where the dent was. So I rolled over, and sure enough, it was a perfect match. Uh-huh. The golf cart is what dented my truck. So we had to come to Jesus meeting with the kids that night. It's like, all right, who backed the golf cart into my truck? And they're just like, Dad, I didn't. I said, I know you didn't, honey, because you weren't allowed to drive it a couple years ago, so you can leave. It's like, all right, who did it? It was silence. I said, look, no one's leaving this room until I find out who backed the golf cart in the truck. And they're just like, quiet. I mean, my kids are good. They got their poker faces on. You would think the two innocent ones would look at the guilty one, but they didn't. They're all looking at me. I said, all right, everybody's grounded. No one's going anywhere. No one's doing anything because you're wasting my time. Tomorrow night, we'll have another meeting. And besides your chores, and that's kind of a joke because it's like chaos trying to get them to do things, and then they don't do it well, you know, and it's just, so it's like, okay, I'm going to add some other jobs, and you're going to be working with me around the house, so welcome to the Angel Penitentiary, because that's what it's going to be like until I find out who did this. And Skyler's like, Dad, I think it may have been me. And I said, was it the whiplash or the sound of crashing metal that it may have been you? She says, well, I was backing up, and I knew I hit something, and I was in a hurry, so I took off. I didn't want to look. And then later on, I saw this big dent in your truck. I didn't think there's no way I could have done that. So I didn't think it was me. It's like, yes, honey, it was you. And so things are like that around our house. And our four-wheeler got smashed in. It's like, who wrecked the four-wheeler? I don't know. And Ledger was driving the other day, and I said, and it was hurting his leg because it was bent. And I said, well, I'm going to fix it. And so we hook a chain up to the truck and our SUV on the other end of it. And I said, Tangie, now pull it. And if we can just bend it back out, it'll straighten it up and it'll run better. But she hit the gas a little too much, and she pulled it, and psh, all these parts started popping off the four-wheeler, plastic everywhere. And she gets out. She goes, what happened? I said, we over-adjusted it. I said, just go in the house. I'll take care of it. And so I figured, well, if I beat the front end back in, I can put all the parts back. So I get a sledgehammer, and I'm hitting it, and it barely did anything. So I am pounding it with a sledgehammer, and I'm making progress. And Tangie opens the door. She says, our neighbor across the street wants to know if you're okay. It's like, why wouldn't I be okay? She says, their whole family is looking out the window wondering why you're destroying the kid's four-wheeler with a sledgehammer. Me? I destroy nothing in our house. That's all I do is fix things. So if you have trouble with materialism or you think you're materialistic, solution, go away for a week. Let my kids move in your house. We'll even bring their dog to help out a little bit. And when you get home, you'll have to put your joy and happiness in things other than your possessions. They'll break you of it. We're going to look at the story of Moses, because how we define more will make a big difference on how we live our life, how we treat people in our relationships, and how we manage God's resources, his money. And so we're going to get to the core issue of finances and money today. And that's going to help us as we study through the book and all the different areas of that, how we look at things and how we go about our daily decisions in doing that. So in the Old Testament, the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, are all written by Moses. In fact, his story is in there. There's no way we have time to read all that, so we're going to go to the New Testament to help us understand a little bit of the Old Testament. So we're going to be in the book of Acts, if you want to turn there with me, Acts chapter 7, and Exodus chapter 32. Moses also wrote the first five books of the Old Testament. So here we are, Acts 7, 17. As time drew near for God to fulfill his promise to Abraham, the number of our people in Egypt had greatly increased. And then a new king, whom Joseph meant nothing, came to power. He dealt treacherously with our people and oppressed our ancestors by forcing them to throw out their newborn babies so that they would die. At the time of Moses was born, he was no ordinary child. For 3 months he was cared for by his family, and he was placed outside. Pharaoh's daughter saw him, she took him in, and she brought him up as her own son. Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in speech and action. So here we have the New Testament church is starting. Stephen is talking to the people, and he's saying, okay, here's what has happened in the Old Testament. And these people knew nothing about Jesus except that they believe that he died for them. They're going to follow him. They're going to be a Christ follower. So Stephen's explaining to them, okay, here's how we get from Abraham all the way down to Jesus in a very condensed version here in the seventh chapter of Acts. And so Moses lived to be 120 years old. The Bible breaks down his life into three 40-year sections. So we're going to look at the first 40 years of Moses' life when he is a baby. And no, he was not born with a silver spoon in his mouth. But several months after he was born, he had a silver spoon in one hand, a gold spoon in another, and he was kicking around bronze spoons with his feet. He was adopted into royalty. So here he had the best of education. He had the best that money could buy, all the nicest things with Pharaoh and his household. And he had servants, and he was somebody. He was well-educated. And so if you would ask Moses, he would say, yeah, I am somebody. I've got everything I need, more than I need. I got a great position. People fear my name when I walk by. And I'm a part of Pharaoh and his whole organization. And I got it together. I've got a great life. Well, things took a turn for the worse. Because Moses thought he was somebody, he's still a Hebrew and still cared about his people, an Egyptian taskmaster was abusing a Hebrew slave. And Moses stopped. He hopped in, he pulled the guy off, he started beating the Egyptian until he killed him. See, Moses had an anger problem that he could not control very well, kills the Egyptian, buries him in the sand, and goes about his day. Well, later on the next day, he sees two Hebrews fighting. He says, why are you fighting? Stop fighting, you guys. You're brothers. And they said, whoa, Moses, what are you going to do? Kill us like you did that Egyptian? Ah, now Moses knew that people are going to know that somebody saw him kill this man. And it wouldn't be long before Pharaoh would find out, and he'd be after him, and he would kill him. So that brings us to Moses' next 40 years, where he fled. He fled to the desert, and there nobody knew who he was. His name meant absolutely nothing. And so Moses was now a nobody. He was nothing. And it says in verse 29, when Moses heard this, he fled to Midian, where he settled as a foreigner, and he had two sons. He had two sons, and he worked as a farmhand. He was a shepherd. That was his job. He worked for his father-in-law. He was out in the fields, and his life was basically boring. He had no power. He had no resources. He didn't have the comforts that he did. He went from somebody to nobody. Until one day, he's out, and this bush is on fire. And Moses is like, that's odd. The bush is on fire, but it's not burning up. It's not being consumed. Then he walks over and he checks it out, and there's this booming voice from this heavens, and the bush is talking to him. Moses. Moses, I need you, Moses, to lead my people and free them from slavery in Egypt. And Moses knew that this was God. And that God is willing to use him now. And so that's going to bring him to his last 40 years of his life. And so God is willing to use Moses, even after his sin. And the time he spent in the desert being nobody, being nothing, God says, okay, Moses, I need you to lead my people out of Egypt. So how we define more is by understanding Moses' most defining moment. So what was it? Was it the plagues? Which plague would it have been? You know, the bugs and the frogs and the things that happened, they were pretty impressive, but they had infestations before. Maybe not to that magnitude, but nobody was really caught off guard and too impressed that a God could cause that. And the total darkness was pretty impressive, but yeah, they've been storms and it's been dark before. Maybe not that long, but they dismissed it, didn't they? But boy, when all the water turned to blood, was that Moses' most defining moment? I mean, even the blood and the pitchers and the houses and the creeks and the lakes and everywhere, nobody could drink anything. Maybe there is a God. But when the firstborns died, people knew, and Pharaoh knew, your God is the guy, and he's powerful, and I can't go against him, Moses. And even the Hebrew people, God's people, if they did not do what God said that night, they would lose their child. And even though they may have been pretty good believers, and they thought, well, I got a great life, God, I'm doing what you want, but I just don't have time to go get the lamb's blood and paint above the door. And so, yeah, when they wake up and their child is dead, they weren't exempt from what God asked them to do. But God gave everyone a chance. Was that the most defining moment? Maybe it was the Red Sea when Moses parted the Red Sea and all the people were walking across and they were getting close to the other side. But no, here comes the Egyptian army, and now are they gonna catch them? They're getting closer and they're getting closer. No, they're not gonna make it, and they barely get there, and God lets the water crash in and kills the Egyptians. Is that it? Would that be his most defining moment as a leader? That God would use him to free the people and protect them from their enemies. And then God provides food for them every day out of nowhere. They're in the desert and they have enough to eat and they have water to drink, and they're together and they're worshiping God and they're a church family and they're taken care of. All their needs are taken care of. And Moses said, I need to go spend some time with God. I'm going to go up into the mountain and I'm going to spend time with God. We're going to go to the Old Testament now, to Exodus 32. We're going to pick up with verse 9. As Moses comes down off of the mountaintop, he was shocked at what he saw. See, the people wanted more. It wasn't good enough. All that, unfortunately, was not good enough. They wanted more, and they wanted it now. Moses wasn't around. Where is God when we need him? So we're going to make our own God. And Aaron had, okay, bring all your gold together and we'll make ourselves a God. We'll make this idol and that'll be our God. That's what we'll worship, and that's what they did. And Aaron, even one of the top leaders, was in on it. And Moses comes down and sees the people worshiping a gold statue. Really? And God is furious. And so God speaks to Moses, said, I've seen these people, the Lord said, and they are stiff-necked people. Now leave me alone so my anger will burn against them and I may destroy them. And I'll make you a great nation, Moses. I've had it with these people. They're all I've done. Just a brief moment that I'm spending with you. And they just can't wait. They're just so impatient. It's about them. They want more. They want it now. And God is saying, Moses, I'm going to make you great. You see what's happening? Moses is getting the offer of a lifetime. It's like the ultimate Shark Tank offer. All the sharks are in. They're given more than the person asked for, all their resources, all their help, because they believe in them 100%. Moses, you have been faithful to me. I am going to build a whole new nation through you. I'm going to wipe these people out. And with that, Moses understood exactly what that meant. He would have all the resources, all the wives, all the servants, all the livestock, all the money that he could possibly want. And his name would be it, and the nation would fall under him. He would be the one that would be the leader of God's people. And he would be somebody again. Then Moses, most defining moment, was here. And he said, God, no, I don't want that. Because God, your name is great. I am here to lift your name up, God. I don't want my name lifted up. It's not about me, God. It's about you. You are great. And so Moses knew that God is everything. Says, God, you're everything. God, spare these people. Forgive them. Don't wipe them out. Let me continue to lift you up. And don't bring your wrath and your anger against these people. And so as we study and talk about finances, we're talking about giving and that how we need to really give more. And so the Old Testament standard of the tithe, 10%, is really not the New Testament standard of the tithe, because Jesus talks about love and that all the Beatitudes and things we had talked about a couple months ago, that everything is more, it's deeper. You know, adultery in the Old Testament, don't commit adultery. Well, Jesus talks about in the New Testament, don't even lust after a person. And then you're not going to worry about adultery, but if you lust, you sin. So we talk about giving. If you give, if you love me, you're going to give more. So we're talking about giving more, and we're talking about saving more and investing more and making more. God's given us talents and abilities, and sometimes we're not even living up to what he's doing in our life because we're lazy. And we're not using the talents and abilities or develop them more in our life to earn more that God set us up in the first place to earn more, and we're not doing it. Because we can't give more if we don't earn more. But it's going to take a little effort on our part. But Moses realized that God was everything. And he didn't need to have his name above anything. He didn't need to be the guy. And when we figure out that God is the more, it changes everything in our life. Because God is more. And we live in a materialistic world. And when we understand that God is everything, God is our center, our spiritual being, every decision that we make, especially when it comes to finances, it happens within because we understand that God is the more. And we're in this materialistic world all around us that God has put us in to live in, to have relationships, and to manage and to do something with. And when we understand that God is more, it will dictate and determine how we deal with our finances. Till we understand that, no matter how much money we have or how many possessions that we get or where we're working or our family situations, we're really never going to be content. We're going to want more. Because we don't have that. We've got a void in our life. We got a hollow space between all this materialistic things around us that are telling us what to do and where to go and how to have a great life and how to be happy. Moses figured out that God was everything. And God is the more. I think most people spend their spiritual lives between I am somebody and I'm nobody. And even when we grow spiritually, we'll sin and Satan will put into our heads that, hey, you're nobody. God's not going to use you again. What you did was unbelievable. You need just to forget it. You need just to walk away from him. And we bounce between I am somebody and I am nobody. And we never really get to the point where we accept that God is everything in our life. And sometimes I listen to Satan's words and I get down and I feel like a nobody. You see, in Christianity, in our materialistic world that we live in, there are some people that get tied up more in what I want. Even in our churches today, it's, let's face it, it's about me, what I want. And a lot of that might be good stuff. What I want for my family, what I want for my life, what I want for my health. And we even come to church, we come to worship, and we act spiritual, but it's about us. It's about me and what I want. And then it's easy to walk away sometimes from our family. Because I want more of a wife. She's not good anymore. I want more of a husband. So I'm out of here. I lie and cheat at work. I want more from my belt. I'm not getting paid enough. Or I'm going to do what it takes to get that position. I want more. My kids aren't being taught at church. I'm not sure about that children's program. I don't know about these songs aren't motivating. I'm not being motivated spiritually. Why don't you spoon feed me? I want more. And so, okay, we're going to leave. We're going to go find a new church. Well, oh, now we're having a conversation, aren't we? Well, the grass is greener on the other side. I see it. I'm going to go for it. I'm going to get it because it's about me. When we are standing on holy ground, the grass is always the greenest under our feet. Sometimes I mess up. I feel like a failure. I feel like I'm nobody, and I start to waste my time. I start to waste my financial resources. I hurt relationships around me, and God will restore me, and I'll feel like I'm somebody again. See, it's just kind of a natural part of our society, isn't it? So it starts in elementary. Get to the top of elementary school, and you're going to middle school, so you feel like you're somebody. Yeah, you get into middle school. You're the youngest now, and they're going to make sure, yeah, hey, pick on you a little bit. Now you feel like nobody. And you're leaving middle school, you get into high school as a freshman. Boy, I'm feeling good coming as a freshman. It's like, oh, no, you're not. The upperclassmen are going to make sure you know that you're nobody. Boy, I'm graduating from high school. Feels great. I'm going to college. Get there. It's like, oh, no, you're a little freshman. You don't know anything. Back to nobody. Get into the workforce. Start a job. Got your degree. You're all excited to go. Boy, I'm somebody. Getting there. The employees don't treat you very well. No, you got to earn your keep, buddy. You haven't been here very long. You're nobody. And it just continues on and on, doesn't it? It never ends. But when we figure it out, and we know that God is the more, no matter where we're at or what situation we're in, we know that this is where God has me. And there's a sense of contentment and peace that we can't get any other way. Maybe you're here this morning and you've never even accepted God into your life. We want to give you that opportunity this morning. See, Moses was wrong about being somebody. And Moses was wrong about being nobody. But he got it right in the last stage of his life. That God is everything. God is the more. If you have a decision to make, you can come forward as we sing our invitation hymn. Won't you stand as we sing?